superior views and issues from a superior point of view. Come
back. She's a two-time Midwest Country Music Songwriter of the Year and also draws on her classical voice training. We'll catch up with Sarah Morris. Plus, last fall, he flipped the long-held Democratic Assembly seat to the Republicans.
I had an in-depth conversation this morning on school funding, you know, and how Northern Wisconsin's kind of been left out in the grand scheme of things.
Representative Chance Green updates us on Northwest Wisconsin's priorities in Madison. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. For years, the congressional and state legislative delegations of Northwest Wisconsin were solidly the domain of Democrats, a trend that began to change with the retirement of longtime 7th District Congressman Dave Obey in 2011. He was succeeded by a Republican, and last fall, the area's state legislative delegation followed suit with the election of State Senator Romaine Quinn for the 25th District and Representatives Angie Sapik in the 73rd District and Chance Green in the 74th. He's from the town of Grandview. He's a small business owner as well as a former volunteer firefighter, and he was the Assistant Director of Public Works in Amory and the Utilities Manager in Ashland. And Chance Green joins us now. Welcome to Simply Superior.
Well, thank you, Robin. I appreciate you having me.
So last week we had Senator Quinn on, and I teased him, saying that during the campaign he had the funniest commercials. He was making fun of his own name. I was talking about romaine lettuce and things like that. Where did you get the name Chance? And that is spelt for our listeners, C-H-A-N-Z.
Yep, and a lot of times I have to clarify on how that is pronounced, but it is like take a chance. My mother heard that name working in a factory down in Turtle Lake, Wisconsin, actually, and she fell in love with it. Of course, she changed it a little bit to make it her own, added the Z in the end, and here we are. Chance Green, yep.
So it is your real name?
It is, yes, yep.
Okay. Well, moving from that, now that we got that straight, we just had the Superior Days delegation to the Capitol last month. And even though it came at the biggest snowstorm of the year, everybody felt good about it. People weren't shy about noting, as I noted, that we have a Republican legislative delegation with your party in power, meaning you should be able to bring local concerns to the people who can get them on the agenda. Is that going to happen?
I believe so. I'm really excited. I feel optimistic. 3 months into this now, I really have enjoyed working with my new colleagues. And like you say, being Republican and being a part of the majority, I think that gives Northern Wisconsin a lot better opportunities to the things that we've been missing out on the past, 35 years, I believe it's been. So I'm excited to moving forward. I think we're not only being heard down there, but we're being considered. Of course, there's 64 other Republicans in the room that want to represent their area just as much. But like I said, I think we have a loud voice in the assembly with me and Angie down there. And I know in the Senate, Quinn is a loud voice as well. He's well respected. He's been down there a lot prior to this, so everybody knows him. So I'm really excited and optimistic moving forward that Northern Wisconsin's going to have that voice, that they're finally going to be heard.
Mm-hmm. Let's get specific on one of those. I think the big one that Superior and other local municipalities have been seeking for years and has actually been led by Republicans or Republican leading business people is tax retention. So which would allow counties and municipalities to keep 20% of the sales tax they collect. Is this the year for it?
Well, again, optimistic. Shared revenue has been a huge discussion down at the Capitol. And I, from the discussions I've had with leadership and everything, we're moving forward. It's definitely not dead. I feel optimistic that we will come to some resolution. And I think that we will benefit from it strongly in northern Wisconsin. I think it's going to help us a lot. So I'm optimistic. I'm excited. We're still moving forward on things like that. And hopefully by June or July, we'll have it in the budget and make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Another one that was on the Superior Days agenda was, tuition reciprocity between students who go to school in Minnesota or Wisconsin but live in the opposite state. And likewise, there's tax reciprocity for workers who live in one state and work in the other. Do you see that happening this year?
I believe it will. I know there's legislation. I've seen that. I co-sponsored it when it comes to students and the reciprocity between states. And when it comes to the taxes to amongst workers and stuff, I know it's been in discussion. So it's on the table. A lot of things are being discussed. And moving forward, I think I feel optimistic that we can make it happen.
Mm-hmm. We are speaking with Chance Green. He represents the 74th District in the Wisconsin Assembly. He's a member of the Republican Party, which has had a majority and almost a supermajority in the state legislature. That means working to get these things done with Democratic Governor Tony Evers. So how's that going? And have you had your pictures taken together yet?
We have. So Tony, being governor, often requests meetings with freshmen. I have had my meeting with Tony. We spoke, the entire meeting, we spoke on mental health. You know, my questions were, he dedicated this year to mental health. He put a lot of money in his budget for it. I asked how we were going to implement it and how we were going to make it sustainable. I'm still waiting for some of that information to come back. His staff said he would send some over when they got an opportunity to. But nonetheless, we had an in-depth conversation. I felt it was a productive meeting. We spoke a little bit at the State of the Tribes address. There was a meeting mm-hmm. the following day. He was the keynote, or he was speaking, and I was next. So we conversated a little bit. I do believe that... you know, it's a professional relationship. We don't agree on much when it comes politically, but I think if the lines of communication are open, there's always hope. So we'll see going forward. Like I say, I don't approve of all of his actions and things that have happened in the recent months. I think the budget's a little overinflated. It'll drive us into if we were to implement his budget as proposed, it would bankrupt us by 2027. So you know, I think there's some miscues there, but luckily we have good leadership and a Republican caucus that can kind of rein it in and be a little more sensible, a little more practical when it comes to the budget. But yeah, other than that, it's been a good working relationship so far. We'll see how it goes and how long it lasts.
Mm-hmm. You must have anticipated my next question, because I was going to ask any of his policies that you can easily support, but you already said mental health is a major concern for both of you.
It is, yes. I'll be honest, in my personal life, I never dealt with much mental health issues. When it come to family or friends, it just wasn't something I was aware of. But in the campaign, we knocked on just over 13,000 doors. I heard it at every one. It's a huge issue in northern Wisconsin. And it's been, I won't lie, I've been beating that drum in Madison regularly. I make sure people know that it's an issue that we need to get behind. And I think it is something that the governor and I can agree on. How we get there and how we implement it, how we fund it, I think me and him probably don't agree. But nonetheless, I was happy to have that conversation with him, because as rural Wisconsin, not everything that they do downstate will apply to us. So we have mm-hmm. to be creative in how we implement and treat mental health up there in rural Wisconsin. And I looked to him for some advice on that. I won't lie. I thought, well, maybe he's got something that I haven't thought of yet. I've been an open book when it comes to mental health because I'm not as fluent in the issue. But there again, we need to figure out what works best for northern Wisconsin and go from there.
And we've had several stories about that we don't have the facilities up here that are elsewhere in the state. And so people are supposed to travel to get that type of care. Is that part of your agenda, bringing attention to that?
It has been. And we've discussed, you know, implementing or trying to get facilities in the area. But I really feel that we don't actually utilize the facilities we do have. This Ashland MMC has a 10-bed facility that treats everything from mental health issues or drug addiction to mental health and suicide. I mean, they have a one-stop shop when it comes to mental health. They can treat everything. They have a great variety there. That was a facility I was unaware of. So that's something that we need to make known. I think we need to market and we need to promote it. We need to tell people that this is an option. Now, don't get me wrong. It isn't big enough. You know, they're already almost at capacity most of the time. It's definitely utilized, but making aware of the resources we do have in Northern Wisconsin should be our first step. Another great facility I found out about last week was Northern Lakes Clinic. They have a great behavioral health program. They have a lot of options when it comes to that. So those are some resources in the area that we need to better promote, I feel, you know, make sure we're utilizing the resources we have and build off of that. So when it comes to actually bringing in another facility, I'm open to it, but it has to be executed correctly and it has to be sustainable. So those are the options we're looking at, but I'm not against any options when it comes to mental health. I had a great conversation with a gentleman from Abbotsford, and Marathon County has a great program when it comes to preventative, or, you know, I guess proactive mental health issues. You know, they have staff at the county level that go out to school districts and meet with students and help them, not only let them know that there's a resource for them to reach out to, but they help them through any issues that they are dealing with. So I love that idea, but how we implement it again in Northern Wisconsin, where we don't have the population as dense as Marathon County, these are the obstacles we're dealing with. So we're exploring all options. I'm open-minded to any and all options. We just have to find the best fit for Northern Wisconsin and how to sustainably fund it and make sure that it's there for the long run.
You certainly don't need me to try to solve all the problems, but seriously, what you're saying, what you just mentioned in Marathon County, sort of brings to mind the issue of meat inspection. We had a whole show on it, and of course, it was a part of the Superior Days agenda, too. And one of the things the administration officials said is that there are mobile meat inspectors, mobile, I should say, slaughtering facilities, trailers, really. And so, you know, that is an example of we don't have those resources in our area directly, but they can be brought here. So I'm just hearing, as you said, Marathon County bringing the services out to people. Perhaps something statewide could be done to bring those professionals here.
Exactly. Yep. And yeah, like I say, I don't know how the implementation would work. You know, I do have conversations with the people that are really involved with this or have been in the past and have dealt with it. I have these conversations with them because they know best. But yeah, like I say, it has to be practical. It has to be responsible. We can't just, you know, I'm not one for expanding government, but these research, we need to look at all options when trying to battle mental health and the mental health issues we're dealing with in Northern Wisconsin.
A lot of what we're talking about is geographic. And so I'm wondering how it's working out for you personally. This isn't Congress where you have to move to Washington, D.C., but Madison isn't close, as we all know, for making that long trip down 53 and finally getting to 94. How about you? How's it been traveling? Do you have a crash pad, or how's it work?
No, so my routine, I usually leave Monday nights or early on Tuesday morning. It's a nice 5-hour drive down to Madison, so I get a lot of me time. I've learned, been listening to a lot of podcasts, a lot of books on tape. So I get a little bit of me time. I get to jam out, and I won't lie, this week was probably the most noticeable, but I left home with 5 feet of snow on the ground and, you know, just snow everywhere, cold. And I got to Madison and it was 55. I had my windows down. So I literally went through a season change, it felt like, in just 5 hours, you know. So it's that's kind of refreshing, I won't lie. It's kind of nice to be even in my office. You know, I have the window open now, and we're not quite there yet in Northern Wisconsin. I don't have the windows open on the house yet, mostly because I can't see out them. The snow piles are too tall. So that's those little differences are noticeable, I guess. But like I say, the 5-hour drive, I still am excited to go. I'm still excited to drive down to Madison and be a part of something bigger than myself. I really enjoy that. And so far, I'm enjoying it. This is a great job. It's a great opportunity. I hope I can serve and make Northern Wisconsin proud. And if I got to drive 10 hours a week to do it, well, then I'll do it.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, how many days are you there? And what's your schedule back here?
3 to 4 usually. So like I say, I usually either Monday night or early Tuesday mornings. And then if I can, I try to leave Thursday nights late. But it all depends on meetings and such. As we get deeper into the budget, I do anticipate being down there roughly 4 days a week. I try to do as much stuff on my Mondays and Fridays in district meeting. Like I say, seeing this facility, seeing all the things that I haven't probably seen living in Northern Wisconsin. So I take time to try to do that and meet with people and see what's going on and get around the district and just see, you know, if I don't hear from people and if I don't know what's going on, well, I can't fix it. So I try to take as much time as I can to do that. But yeah, it's a seven days a week job. But I knew that going into it, I signed up for this. And so, like I said, so far I've enjoyed it. I really love meeting people and hearing what issues are affecting them. And hopefully we can solve that and make life a little better in Northern Wisconsin.
And to do so, what are your biggest priorities, either those that were on the Superior Days agenda or not?
Gotcha. Well, so my biggest focus is I'm an avid outdoorsman. I'm really involved with a lot of the things that are going down there. I'm actually attending the Wisconsin Bear Hunters Association convention down in Wausau. I've been a lifetime member there. So hunting and advocating for hunting is a big thing of mine. The wolf population in Northern Wisconsin, I feel, is out of whack. We need to control it, we need to contain it, and we need to manage it. I have some legislation out currently just requesting that the new wolf plan include a population goal. I didn't ask for a number. I don't feel that it's the legislator's job to do that. But I do believe that any successful program, any successful management plan needs to have a numbered goal in mind. So we have that legislation out now, it's circulating, but that's one of my biggest passions down there, especially the outdoors. But tourism, anything like that, I'm in favor of. I have a lot of legislation right now when it comes to snowmobiles and ATVs circulating, just because it's such a economical driver in our neck of the woods. Plus, it's what we do up there. You know, everybody has a side by side, everybody has a four wheeler, everybody has a snowmobile in the winter. So making sure that those rights remain there for us to utilize and people can enjoy those sports up there is a big part of mine. But yeah, the bigger reason, big reason down there, like you say, is mental health. I think I've hit on that one enough during this conversation, but it is an issue that I feel needs to be addressed. And I've, like I said, I've made it known down there that I'd love to address it and fix it, bring a resolution to Northern Wisconsin. I had in-depth conversation this morning on school funding, you know, and how Northern Wisconsin's kind of been left out in the grand scheme of things. You know, we're kind of forgotten because we don't have the big numbers and the big populace, but nonetheless, our kids are just as valuable and they deserve the same education that everybody else is getting. So school funding has also been a top priority. So just a lot going on. Believe it or not, every issue hits your desk and you try to give it each issue as much time as you can. But these are the ones that are kind of driving us right now. So making sure we get everybody taken care of and come to a good resolution that everyone can live with. That's the goal. That's what we're after down there.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with Chance Green from the town of Grandview. He represents the 74th District in the Wisconsin Assembly. A pretty large district, goes from Ashland all the way down to Bryce County. Thank you for joining us, Chance.
Thank you, Robin. I appreciate your time.
Coming up, she's a country music singer of the year with classical training.
Champagne on a Wednesday, why not? Give me a reason. Well, okay then. Sit back and watch this cork go fly in. It does so. You're laughing, holding the glasses. They overflow. We're high before the foam reaches our lips.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. One of the music styles most frequently heard on our show is Americana, which is related to country, but kind of like an eccentric cousin who does their own thing. That might describe Sarah Morris, whose accolades include being twice named Songwriter of the Year by the Midwest Country Music Organization, yet she also smooths over the rough edges of country with a buttery voice and intimate songwriting style, as the Minneapolis Star Tribune put it. Her latest album, Here's to You, explores that intimacy further, mining the conversations of lovers, friends, and family for her material. So you might want to watch out what you say to her. But it's perfectly safe to listen to her, which you can do at Wusel's Concert Cafe in Duluth on April 7th. And she joins me now. Welcome to Simply Superior, Sarah Morris.
Hi, Robin. Thank you so much for having me.
So do I have to be careful what I say to you? Am I going to end up in a song somewhere?
I mean, I would say anytime you talk to any songwriter, that's probably, you know, it's not that you should be careful, but I think it's worth noting that anything you say could be a song at any time.
So has that gotten you in trouble? Anyone ever complain? Or you could disguise them like, you know, Carly Simon and You're So Vain?
Exactly. What tends to happen for me, rarely would one song be specifically one person, one incident, right? Like, I feel like almost everything is a bit of a composite. And so maybe an incident or a offhand comment might begin the song. But, you know, ultimately, other life experiences and then some imaginated experiences will also make their way in.
Ah, okay.
So I've yet to get in trouble. Even, you know, I did write one kind of pointed, angry song once, and it seemed to work out okay. So
okay, well, it didn't get you in court. That's what matters more.
Nope.
Than
nope.
Anything.
Nope.
Any similarity to persons fictitious or whatever it says at the
exactly.
end of the movie. Yeah, there we go.
That's right.
All right.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We'll run that at the end of the show.
Yep.
So it sounds like your music genre has evolved over the years. Tell us how you got there. How did you start out? You weren't born writing songs, or maybe you were.
No, I was not. Nope, nope, nope. I, you know, was born to two parents who really loved music deeply. They didn't necessarily love the same music, but they both had a passion for it. My dad really loved vocalists, like he loved crooners, and, you know, like he also loved harmonies. Like he loved Queen, he loved Steely Dan, he loved Frank Sinatra, he loved Ella Fitzgerald, Johnny Mathis, Barbra Streisand. So that was what I kind of got from my dad. And I feel like my mom really loved David Bowie, still loves David Bowie. And so I got very different influences from both of them. But what they shared was just this, you know, music was always on. Music was it was always supported because they just loved music so much. When I started to make my own choices around music, I was very, you know, a kid of the 80s. So it was Madonna and it was Cyndi Lauper and MTV. And then I also kind of wanted to be Bette Midler. She was always a favorite. But I really didn't consider writing songs until I fell in love with Mariah Carey in the early 90s, because I just loved her music so much. And I had this VHS tape where she talked about writing songs. It just had not occurred to me prior to that, that that's how we get these songs. So she would talk about when she was getting started, she was would sweep up a hair salon and she'd have song ideas. And then she would go to a payphone and call her home answer machine to make sure she got the melody down. And so that was kind of the first introduction I had to that. Both you're going to write songs about what you're feeling, and then two, that you're going to be like, it's this active thing. Like it might come to you and you need to get it and like make sure that you don't forget it and all those things. So that's where that started. And then in high school, just a few years after I fell in love with Mariah, I fell in love with a real live boy, and he was a very big country music fan. And so that's kind of where he introduced me to not only 90s country, where there was just, in my opinion, a ton of excellent songwriting going on, but also the Eagles and James Taylor. So I think that piece really kind of solidified my desire to write, but I still was kind of scared of it until I didn't write a song until I was 22. I went to college. I studied classical music.
I was going to ask about that. Did you play an instrument?
I sang. Yep. I studied classical voice and music education, and I went to Lawrence University, which is in Appleton, Wisconsin. So they have a really excellent conservatory program. So many, many, many hours were spent on theory. And I think that that really served me super well when I moved to Nashville later to pursue songwriting, because Nashville does everything by the number system. So when you're writing your song, you're saying, oh, I'm using the one chord here, the four chord here, the two minor, like. And I think that could have felt overwhelming to me, except for essentially that's what we did with Bach part writing. So that's kind of my, that's sort of, I don't know. Now I just told you a whole lot, Robin. Is that maybe more than you wanted?
No, we're getting a great music lesson here. And, you know, I've heard of classical and actually Baroque in particular being used in jazz and the harmonics and all. I hadn't heard of it in country. So it's you just educated me on something. So,
Yes. Well, there you go.
Okay, well, we've got lots of influences there. Let's hear what they came out to. How about You Are, which is subtitled Champagne on a Wednesday. You want to tell us what this is about?
Yeah, so I do most of my songwriting now based on prompts that I'm handed by a person in Wisconsin who runs a prompt-based writing group. And our prompt was pop, the word pop. You can use it however you want. And it made me think of popping a champagne cork. And I thought about some women in my life, specifically my mom, specifically my best friend, people who I think sometimes don't know how spectacular they are. And I wanted to write a song that kind of shared that with them, how wonderful I think they are.
All right. Here is You Are, subtitled Champagne on Wednesday by Sarah Morris.
Champagne on a Wednesday, why not? Give me a reason. Well, okay then. Sit back and watch this cork go flying. It does so. You're laughing, holding the glasses. They overflow. We're high before the foam reaches our lips. I can't stop smiling. Oh, this is all I really want.
And that was You Are, subtitled Champagne on a Wednesday by our guest, Sarah Morris. She's playing at Wusel's Concert Cafe in Duluth a week from today at 7 p.m. on April 7th. So I noticed in this song and a few of your others, some false starts maybe, or a now for something completely different all of a sudden in the middle of a song. I'm sure they're on purpose, but did they start out as accidents or maybe showing us where you changed your mind in the middle of the song or something? Particularly at the beginning of You Are There, it started out one way.
And, oh, yes.
Yep, right.
Well, that was some wild stuff. So I worked with producer Dave Mayling on this album. He's actually from Duluth.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a wild, awesome genius. One of the reasons I've made a little fair amount of records, they've been co-productions with my band in the past. And so this is the first time in a long while that I've just used a producer. And I really admire the sense of play that Dave uses in his own music, specifically his most recent full-length album, Beach Boy, that he put out. It just is like so fun to me. And so I really encouraged him to direct us in any way that led towards fun and led towards play. And that's what I think you're hearing there.
And in addition to Dave, are there regular bandmates that you play with?
Yes, yes. So when I started making music with a band back in 2011, I found Thomas Nordlund. He's an excellent guitar player. And he started playing with me. And then I asked him if he had a bass recommendation. And that was Andrew Foreman. And then a few years later, we began playing with Lars Erik Larsson on drums. And so those three have been with me for over 10 years now. And we didn't have a name for them. They were just my band, you know. And then at some point I joked they were the sometimes guys because they play with me sometimes. I do a fair amount of solo shows as well. And so whenever we do get to play together, which isn't often enough anymore just because of
life,
right. COVID meant that like Andrew mostly lives in Greece now. So it like things just changed. But we're kind of a family too. So it's really lovely that even if we don't get to play together, like we are still in touch. And the name Sometimes Guys totally works because they play with me sometimes.
All right. Well, let's hear another. How about Come Back, even though you haven't left yet? What prompt word did that come out of?
That one is a rare non-prompt one. And it just came out of, it's mostly a love song to my son. He's a teenager. And I was just thinking about how there are periods where it's easier to connect with him and periods where it's harder. And the idea, especially as a parent, is, okay, I'm going to stay here and I'm going to be sturdy for you. And you go and you come back and that will be just fine.
And here is Come Back by our guest, Sarah Morris.
I see you out there wandering. Come back. Oh, I missed you so. Come back. Whenever you are ready to come back. Rest a while before, of course, again. Come back, my weight depressing, and then pass away. Come back, my darling, I will be here.
And that was Come Back by our guest, Sarah Morris. She'll be performing at Wusso's Concert Cafe in Duluth next week, April 7th at 7 p.m. So tell us where we can find out more about your music.
My website's a great place, www.sarahmorrismusic.com, and Sarah has an H. And I'm really active on Instagram. I share pictures there quite often, and I also share a lot of like my brand new songs are there, and my information about shows as well, Facebook as well.
Let's hear one more to take us out. How about the title track, Here's to You?
Yeah, that was inspired by the prompt pinup, and it's actually the first two words of the song. It was written at the end of 2021 as we were going, you know, we were kind of in a weird spot still where I was re-encountering places I used to go with ease and maybe noting feeling differently, feeling like I had changed, feeling like other people had changed. And so it's
speaking
kind
of I want to say post-COVID, except I decided there's no such thing as post-COVID.
Well, there is no such thing, right? And 2021, I think, was that time where
we thought there was.
We kept wanting to use that term, but it never fit. And so it was that feeling wanting to celebrate. So things have changed, yes, and how can we honor what's been and where we're going? And that's what Here's to You aims to do.
All right. Yeah. We've been speaking with Sarah Morris. She's playing at Wusso's Concert Cafe in Duluth a week from today on April 7th. Thank you for joining us, Sarah.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much for having me, Robin.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and we're joined by Rick Lubbers of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Robin.
And Danielle Kading of WPR News. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Danny, there's a little activity going on at the City of Superior this week.
That's right, Robin. The city clerk in Superior has agreed to resign as part of a separation agreement that was reached last Friday, March 24th. Her resignation follows a reprimand for insubordination and inappropriate treatment of fellow staff. City Clerk Camila Ramos agreed to resign immediately, and she had previously been placed on administrative leave on March 15th. Following an unsuccessful appeal of a reprimand by Superior Mayor Jim Payne. Payne declined to rehash details of the reprimand on Thursday, but he pointed to circumstances of insubordination and unprofessional treatment of staff, which two former employees had cited as the reason for their resignation last year. And so now Camila Ramos will receive 3 months pay and benefits. She will also receive paid leave that she's accumulated, and she will also receive health and dental coverage through the end of July. WPR reached out to Ramos on Thursday, but she did not respond to our request for comment. She was first appointed as the city's clerk in 2021 by the mayor with approval from the city council, and she had been employed at the city since 2016.
All right. Well, going outside of City Hall, it may be officially spring, but it doesn't quite feel like we've gotten that memo when it comes to air temperature. But the Big Lake has been warmer this winter, at least when it comes to ice cover.
That's right. It's been one of the lowest levels on record this winter, as the region has witnessed warmer than normal temperatures. And average ice cover on the Great Lakes has tied 1998 and 2020 for the third lowest average ice cover since the beginning of the season at just under 6%. That's as of Sunday, according to researchers from the NOAA Great Lakes Environmental Research Lab. And only 2002 and 2012 had average ice cover levels lower than that, according to records dating back 50 years. And so that's being driven by warmer temperatures that we had in January and February. And so the lakes didn't really have time or that persistent cold air needed for them to freeze. And, you know, ice cover on the Great Lakes has been declining over the last 50 years at about a rate of about 5% each decade. And in years where we've had less ice earlier in the season, we have seen more lake warming. And in fact, scientists at the University of Minnesota in Duluth have already seen that the lakes have warmed about 5 degrees Fahrenheit since the 1970s. So there's concerns that these winter conditions are really tied to what we might see later on in the summer here on Lake Superior and elsewhere in the Great Lakes.
Well, one area it will definitely impact is the shipping industry. How's the new season starting out?
Yeah, well, the season just kicked off on March 25th with the opening of the Soo Locks at Sault Ste. Marie in Michigan. And this comes on the heels of the ports of Duluth Superior and Green Bay both seeing an extended season last year, going through January with some of the latest shipments nearly 50 years because of that low ice. And at the start of the season, vessels have so far been able to move more freely compared to last year when there was ice slowing the movement of ships on the upper lakes. And as the season kicks off, we're seeing some new developments at the port of Duluth Superior. Amsterdam-based Speedhoff, one of the largest shipping lines in the Netherlands, is now going to provide monthly container shipping service to the port for the first time in decades. And they'll be capable of carrying raw materials and finished goods and machinery. And also, there will be an $8.5 million expansion of its warehouse space. An additional 55,000 square feet will be added on at the port to help facilitate the movement of goods. And the Port of Duluth Superior is also expecting a pretty good cruise ship season returning after we saw vessels come back for the first time since 2013 last year, bringing more than 5,000 passengers to the Twin Ports. And they're expecting another good year for the cruise season this year.
All right. Well, Rick, you've been looking at one particular international visitor coming into our port.
Yes, the first Salty arrived earlier this week. The 656-foot Federal Dart passed under the aerial lift bridge at 3:30 p.m. on Tuesday, becoming the earliest ocean-going vessel to arrive in the port of Duluth Superior. It beat the previous first Salty of the season record set on March 30, 2013, by 2 days, according to the Duluth Seaway Port Authority. The Federal Dart, which arrived with 23,000 tons of cement, left Turkey on March 3 and made a brief port call in Spain before crossing the Atlantic Ocean and completing the 2,300-mile voyage to North America's farthest inland seaport.
All right. Well, there may not be ice on the lake this year, but there could be a lake on your driveway.
Yes, flooding is coming to a spring near us. Every additional inch of snow on the ground across the Northland is increasing the risk of spring flooding as a near-record snowpack sits waiting for the inevitable melt. The National Weather Service in Duluth recently updated its spring flood outlook to say the risk of floods has again increased in recent weeks as snowfall piles up. Meteorologists warn that if you've had issues with spring flooding in the past, it's likely it will occur again this year. That's because much of the region is now covered by snow equaling 4 to 14 inches of rain. The deepest snowpack remains in the Arrowhead region, especially along higher elevations inland from Lake Superior, where snow is 4 feet deep in some areas. Those areas will be prone to flash flooding as North Shore streams tumble fast into Lake Superior. In other areas, the St. Louis River has a slightly elevated risk of flooding near Duluth, while the St. Croix and Chippewa Rivers in Wisconsin are likely to see flooding too. The Weather Service says any flooding will depend on how quickly the current blanket of snow melts and whether that melt comes with more water from spring rains. That's what happened last year when a late melt coincided with near-record spring rains, causing a flash flooding along the North Shore, wiping out bridges and culverts and causing devastating long-term flooding along the Rainy River watershed. Duluth has officially received over 125 inches of snow this winter. It's already the sixth snowiest on record and just 10 inches shy of the all-time record. Areas to the northeast of Duluth and along the South Shore snow belt in Wisconsin have received even more snow. But there is good news. The heavy snowpack has virtually eliminated an increasing drought that was creeping into the region last fall, according to the National Weather Service.
All right. Well, Rick, you know, your weather report confirms what Representative Chance Green was telling us about the snow he sees up here compared to the dry streets of Madison when he travels down to the Capitol. So there you go. You support it. He's not imagining that. We've been speaking with Rick Lubbers, executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
And Danielle Kading, Superior Base reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Thank you, Danny.
Thanks, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at WPR.org and DuluthNewsTribune.com. And finally today, as members of the University of Wisconsin-Superior community, we're extremely proud to note that Dr. Aaron Aldridge, orchestra director and professor of violin and viola, has been named the recipient of the University of Wisconsin System's Teaching Excellence Award. The award is the highest honor by the UW system for faculty, and we can think of no one else more deserving. Aaron is also the concertmaster of the Duluth Superior Symphony Orchestra and has appeared on our show many times. Here she is on the violin. Congratulations, Aaron. I'm Robin Washington. Stay safe, everyone.